90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jennifer Nella. Who are
good
you?
Good start.
Okay. You know what? Never drink a little bit of water just before you give me this sign.
This is Summer Iman.
Good
okay,
evening.
That's done.
All right. Good evening. This is Jennifer Renee.
And this is Brian Lavinka.
And I'm Glenn Holt. And first up tonight will be our Washington correspondent, David Elliott. David will be filling us in on the latest stuff going on in D.C. that affects the national GLBT community. Followed by News Wrap from This Way Out, which includes a report on One Man, One Woman. It's a bus tour targeting key political U.S. battleground states, sponsored by the National Organization for Marriage. The tour has prompted questions about the anti-gay group's motives and recalls an online posting a few years ago satirically asking a few questions about the literal interpretation of other scriptural passages. Then at 9:30, Jenny Lopez will be here to tell us about the Human Rights Campaign's second annual Bowling for Equality event, which will be taking place this coming Sunday afternoon at Palace Bowling Lanes. It's open to everyone. Show up by yourself or bring a team. At 10 o'clock, we're going to reach way back into the archives to one whole month ago when KPFT's main transmitter was off the air. We are going to rebroadcast for the first time. Notice I said rebroadcast for the first time. The part that we missed actually sending over the air, which is the feature segment from This Way Out from July 5th that you didn't hear, except if you did hear it, if you were listening maybe in Galveston or online. And that's going to be followed by, I hope I say this correctly, Quo Lee Driscoll, a Cherokee two-spirit queer writer, activist, and performer, the author of Walking with Ghosts Poems. Quo Lee is currently an assistant professor in the Department of English at Texas A&M University and is doing research on GLBT Native American communities. And then we have This Way Out, the feature segments, actually for today. And that's the feature segments for this week instead of from a month ago. And so that's going to round out our show for us.
We totally understood all of that.
I'm sure you did.
Yes. And those of you who didn't, please tweet Summer and just ask her. She'll clear it up. And we have on our line David Elliott, like we always do, the first of each
good
month.
Timing.
Yes, David, are you there?
Well, I'm here, Jack, and is that you? Because it's good to hear your voice again.
Well, no, it isn't. This is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Lavinka.
Yeah. Yes, Jack is still on sabbatical.
I'm sorry, Jennifer. Your voice sounds kind of like Jack's.
Well, that's okay. T's are like that sometimes.
And Jack has a high voice.
Yeah, so who do we have in the studio tonight?
Right.
So I know who I'm talking to.
This is Brian Lavinka, and I'm filling in for Jack.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
Great. Brian and Jennifer Renee, and is that all?
That's all.
I mean, not. Don't get me wrong. Not that that's not enough.
Well,
I just wanted to.
That's all. That's all that's in the studio. You know, of course, we have Glenn on the engineering, and Summer is on the computer. But it's just us two and you.
Well, you know, Jennifer Renee, what I wanted to work on at some point was figuring out how to get y'all on video conferencing. So that when I call in, I can actually see your lovely faces and just really, you know, have that human connection. I mean, I know it's radio and I know that you don't get that, but I guess that's just on my wish list. Maybe I'll have to make a contribution to Pacifica and to your station and to maybe round up some contributors from some of my friends in D.C. so that we could make that happen.
I would think that'd be wonderful. The only thing good about radio is that everyone's a 10 on the radio.
I'm a 10 in real life. No, just kidding.
I'm a 10 on the radio. I'm maybe a 5 in real life. But I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't go there.
Yeah, well, David, why don't you tell us about what's going on in Washington, D.C.?
Well, you know what? We are now 91 days away from the election. 91 days away from the first Tuesday in November. Actually, I should say 90 days. In another 2 hours my time, 3 hours your time, will be 91 days. And I wanted to take a moment tonight, if I may, and talk about how we might talk to our neighbors, our coworkers, our family members about the choices that face us come November. Because look, let's be honest, some of us on the liberal side, on the progressive side, on the LGBT side, on the left-wing side, no matter what modifier you might choose, some of us have been disappointed. Some of us have been let down by President Obama. Some of us have been let down by the House and Senate. But let us make no mistake, moving forward, we do face choices. So, with your permission in the studio, I'd like to talk about some of the choices we face. Is that okay?
Please do.
I think that it's very important that between now and Election Day, we frame every debate over every issue as a choice. We are being offered, my friends, a choice between moving forward and moving back to the economic policies of the Bush era. I call them Bushonomics. So here are three examples of choices we already have faced in the past. We faced a choice between passing quality, affordable health care for all, or continuing with a health care system that denied coverage of pre-existing conditions, a system that routinely discriminated against women, a system that punished seniors, our grandparents, our parents, who need prescription drugs. We chose to move forward. And we faced a choice between passing an economic recovery package to help create and preserve jobs, or to do nothing with the attendant risk that our nation could have plunged into a second Great Depression. We chose to move forward, and we now know that moving forward saved or created about 2 million jobs that would otherwise have been lost. We faced a choice the last year and a half between regulating our financial systems, including creating a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or continuing to allow Wall Street to run amok, despite the September 2008 financial meltdown caused by the selling and trading of faulty financial products. We chose to move forward. Those on the other side voted against us. Now, here are some examples of choices we face in the future, both in the coming months and in the coming year or 2 years. We face a choice between creating and saving jobs through public investments or allowing an additional 500,000 public sector workers, including many in Houston, to be laid off. We choose to defend our teachers, our first responders, our healthcare workers, are other essential public sector employees. The other side, they choose to hand out pink slips. We face a choice between defending the safety net, including Social Security and including extending unemployment insurance, or cutting and privatizing Social Security and allowing unemployment insurance to run out for millions of Americans. The other side, they say unemployment, they say unemployed Americans are lazy. We say they can't find jobs because there aren't enough jobs to be found. We face a choice between letting the 2001 and 2003 Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans expire and paying for the things we need, or continuing the tax cuts for the select few and continuing to shift the burden to middle-class Americans. We think Americans who make under $250,000 a year have been punished enough by Bushonomics, and now it's time for those who make more than $250,000 a year to pay their fair share. Finally, we face a choice between putting people ahead of profits or allowing companies like BP, Massey Energy Company, Enron, and Goldman Sachs unfettered power under over our livelihoods and sometimes even our lives. Look at the people who died in the mining accident, you know, the mine owned by Massey Energy. Look at the people who died on the oil well owned by BP and its subsidiaries. We believe in effective, responsible regulation. The other people, they believe government should just get out of the way. Now, what have I left out for our listening audience? I almost said, I was going back to the beginning of this conversation.
Yes.
I almost said our viewing audience. What have I left out for our listening audience? We face bread and butter issues, jobs, livelihoods, people keeping their homes, health care. I've left out, not intentionally, LGBT rights. I didn't put that up at the top because I feel like LGBT people also worry about jobs, also worry about protecting their homes from home foreclosure, also worry about our health care, also worry about, you know, how we're going to send our kids to college and what have you. But we also have a number of issues like Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We're still waiting for that to work its way through Congress. EMDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which must be inclusive of everybody. Lesbian people, gay people, bisexual people, transgender people. We have passed a couple of really good things. The Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Act. We've seen Obama make a number of good nominations of LGBT people, and I stress LGBT people. And there have been some good immigration regulations for LGBT people that have been loosened up. But there's a lot of work to be done. But we face fundamental issues. In 92 days, and it's important that we know going forward how to talk about the issues. It's not just about what Obama has done or hasn't done, or what he said he would do or hasn't been able to accomplish. I mean, you know, there's a saying in Washington, D.C. these days, President Obama agreed to take the keys to the Titanic after it already had hit the iceberg. And I think that's something important to remember. We were in complete crash before he took office. And we've seen that over the last year and a half.
If it hadn't been for taking some action, which would have been from both parties, there is that chance that we'd have been in a depression now, and we'd have some unemployment, but at 9%, that may be good, as opposed to 24% during the Great Depression.
It's a lose-lose. He can't do anything that would appease everyone. Whatever he did would be criticized, and then if he didn't do enough, that would be criticized.
Well, he's being criticized now for not doing enough.
Exactly.
Well, he's not defending the border, but yet he's sending down troops, which is what the other side has always wanted him to do.
Jennifer Renee, on that point, the strange thing is that people on the left are up in arms over this, and I would say perhaps rightfully so. Deportations are way, way up under Obama compared with Bush. Can you believe that? Nobody's reporting that.
No one's reporting that.
We're talking about up 50%. They weren't enforcing the borders that much during the 8 years of the Bush administration. They picked it up a little bit during the last year of Bush. Under the first year and a half of Obama, it's picked up way much, like you wouldn't believe. And, the cynical way to look at that is that he's trying to make that record so that we can come back in 2011 and really do comprehensive immigration reform, which we need to do. But, if that's what the objective is, it's not really working, because there's still this view among the American public, particularly on the right, that Obama isn't enforcing the borders when he is a lot more than his predecessor. It's bizarre.
Well, when you have an effective, and I have to say effective, media campaign from the right that portrays it that way, that's picked up by the blogosphere, and it creates that myth without really using the facts. Don't confuse me with the facts. I've already made up my mind. That sort of thing.
Right. Facts are dangerous things. Hey, I have to ask y'all a question.
Surely. What?
I'm picking up some intelligence here in Washington, D.C.
There's intelligence in Washington, D.C.? Now, that is news.
Hey, I have to tell you a story. I recently served on a jury up here, right?
Okay.
I was on a first-degree murder trial. I was on a jury for about a month. And during break, sometimes I would walk outside and would stand in front of the courtroom, the courthouse.
Okay.
And several times I saw couples of beautiful women wearing exquisite dresses standing in front for pictures.
Okay.
And I would be wondering, wait, okay, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden I realized, oh my God, 2 weeks ago we legalized same-sex marriage.
I told you there's intelligence in Washington, D.C.
I'm not talking about recognizing marriages performed in other states. We did that 6 months or a year ago. I'm talking about now you can get married in D.C. And I was just looking at these dresses, and I kept thinking, what's going on here? And then I had to kind of slap myself, duh, David. Because it didn't actually get a lot of media attention here, because it was seen as just such an obvious duh, like I guess this is what's happened in Europe and stuff when same-sex marriage has been legalized. So yeah, we're in the civilized group here.
Absolutely. Well, David, what do you do during your day job?
Well, I'm the communications director for U.S. Action. We led the fight to get health care reform passed.
Yay!
Then financial reform, and now we're fighting for passing jobs legislation and trying to extend the safety net for people who are unemployed and, who need health care benefits and who need jobs relief. And I wanted to ask y'all real briefly, I understand that Bill White has a chance to beat Rick Perry. Is that true?
That's what we're hearing. The word is that there's a chance, depending on turnout, that he could win by as much as 2 points.
Well,
at least that's what people are talking about. But it's close.
Maybe we can talk about that next month.
That sounds good. Thank you very much, David. First of each month, we speak to David Elliott out of Washington, D.C., our man in Washington, D.C., to tell us what's going on. Thank you very much, David.
Y'all take care.
All right. This is Queer Voices.
I'm John Torres.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 31st, 2010. A crowd estimated at from 2,000 to 3,000 people marched from Jerusalem's Independence Park to the Knesset, or Parliament Building, in a relatively peaceful pride procession on July 29th. About 1,500 police officers guarded the march, but there were no physical confrontations with LGBT rights opponents who gathered along the route. Three women were arrested with cartons of rotten eggs that they'd planned to throw at the participants. What was described as a subdued march began with a minute of silence for the two young people murdered in the bloody massacre during a youth group meeting at the Tel Aviv LGBT Center almost exactly a year ago. The still unknown masked gunman wounded 15 others during the assault. March organizer Yonatan Geyer told the Associated Press why it was more of a procession, albeit with the usual rainbow-colored flags and banners, than typically more flamboyant pride parades. "This is first of all a march of mourning," Geyer said. "At the end, we will try to put the mourning behind us and look forward to the coming year and declare tonight the beginning of Gay Rights Year." While there was no violence as in years past, the marchers still had to endure taunts and placards from ultra-Orthodox Jews and other religious fundamentalists. Two of their signs read, "Beast Parade," and "Sick Perverts, Get Out of Jerusalem."
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe unleashed his latest tirade against gays and lesbians at a religious gathering earlier this week, calling same-gender marriage dog behavior and opposing the inclusion of any rights for sexual minorities in the Southern African country's new constitution, which is still being drafted. Meanwhile, an accountant for Gays and Lesbians of Zimbabwe was acquitted of pornography charges this week for lack of evidence. Ignatius Mohambi was arrested with office administrator Ellen Chadamana in May after a raid on the group's office turned up safer sex videos and a framed letter of support from former high-profile California politician Willie Brown that included his sharp criticism of Mugabe's anti-gay pronouncements. The pair was also arrested for insulting the president, which is a crime in Zimbabwe, but they were not formally charged with that offense. Chadamana's pornography trial is expected to begin in the coming week.
In other news, the first gay couples to wed under Argentina's new marriage equality law tied the knot this week. Previous reports had predicted that the first ceremony would take place on August 13th. José Luis Navarro and Miguel Ángel Calafato married on July 30th in the city of Frias, Santiago del Estero province. The two have been together for 27 years. A few hours later, Argentine actor Ernesto Larrese and his partner of 34 years, actor-manager Alejandro Vanelli, were married in Buenos Aires. Latin America's first extension of full civil marriage equality to same-gender couples, including adoption rights, became law in Argentina on July 21st. Its first lesbian couple is reportedly scheduled to wed in the coming week.
But justices of the New Jersey Supreme Court refused this week to hear a case filed by six same-gender couples demanding the right to civil marriage in that U.S. state. The couples, represented by Lambda Legal, argue that New Jersey's four-year-old civil union law does not comply with the High Court's decision in a 2006 lawsuit ordering the state to provide all the rights of civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. But the ruling left it to the state legislature to determine the exact form that extension of rights would take. Despite the findings of a legislative committee studying the issue that civil unions were not, in practice, being treated in the state as equivalent to marriage, lawmakers failed to pass a bill earlier this year to replace civil unions with civil marriage. In a split 3-3 decision that required four votes to proceed, New Jersey's highest court said that the latest case had to first make its way through lower state courts, as had the original lawsuit when it began 8 years ago.
The biggest news out of Arizona this week was probably a U.S. federal judge's temporary injunction against key provisions of the state's controversial anti-immigrant law. But another federal judge issued a preliminary injunction late last week to prevent the state from enforcing a law that would eliminate domestic partner benefits for gay and lesbian state workers and their families. They had been established under the previous Democratic administration. Under the guise of cost-cutting in the budget-strapped state, legislation to remove those benefits approved by the now Republican-led administration last September was scheduled to take effect on October 1st. Contrary to the state's suggestion, wrote U.S. District Court Judge John Sedgwick, it is not equitable to lay the burden of the state budgetary shortfall on homosexual employees any more than on any other distinct class, such as employees with green eyes or red hair. In the case filed by Lambda Legal on behalf of 10 same-gender partnered Arizona government workers, the judge also denied a motion by the state to dismiss the lawsuit, ordering that it proceed on its merits. The state could challenge the injunction in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
7 same-gender couples in Montana are suing their state for refusing to give them and their families any legal protections. Voters approved an amendment to the state constitution in 2004 that outlawed marriage for or any legal recognition of same-gender couples. The American Civil Liberties Union, which is representing the couples, is not suing for marriage equality, but it wants the state to pass some form of domestic partnership law that would give lesbian and gay couples at least a few basic rights, such as hospital visitation and medical decision-making. Their lawyers argue that the denial of such rights violates the state constitution's guarantees of privacy, dignity, equal protection, due process, and the pursuit of life's basic necessities. Kelly Gibson and her partner Denise Betcher are one of the plaintiff couples in the lawsuit. Denise has stood with me through 56 brain surgeries and over 300 spinal taps, Gibson said in a statement. And yet to Montana, we are nothing more than strangers. Knowing we have legal protections for our family sure would make it easier on both of us the next time I have a medical crisis.
6 Hawaiian gay and lesbian couples filed a lawsuit this week to demand full legal recognition of their relationships. It comes on the heels of Republican Governor Linda Lingle's veto of a civil unions bill, which would have given same-gender couples virtually the same rights offered by the state to heterosexual married couples. The bill had passed in the state legislature. Hawaii voters approved a state constitutional amendment in 1998 allowing lawmakers to limit civil marriage to heterosexual couples. But the measure didn't prohibit other forms of legal recognition. The suit on behalf of 4 lesbian and 2 gay male couples by Lambda Legal and the American Civil Liberties Union of Hawaii seeks the rights and responsibilities equivalent to marriage without calling them that. 2 of the 6 couples also have children. Unlike Montana, Hawaii currently allows what are called reciprocal beneficiaries to adults who can't marry under state law. The plaintiffs say that offers them a narrow and confusing patchwork of limited rights. As in Montana, the Hawaii lawsuit centers on the state constitution's equal protection guarantees, but it also cites the Aloha State Constitution's specific prohibition of gender-based discrimination.
And finally, a one-woman, one-man bus tour sponsored by the National Organization for Marriage is kicking up more than dust in key political battleground states across the U.S. The group, which some critics say is at least closely aligned with, if not virtually funded by, the Mormon Church, has been the primary force behind efforts to deny civil marriage rights to gay and lesbian couples in several states, most recently in California, Iowa, and Maine. The Human Rights Campaign charged this week that the bus tour is a thinly veiled attempt to divert attention from the National Organization for Marriage's numerous legal problems over the group's refusal to comply with election laws that require public disclosure of a political campaign's major donors. Cynics also say that the anti-gay group is hoping for physical confrontations at some of the stops along their bus tour, where peaceful opponents have thus far generally outnumbered traditional marriage supporters to bolster one of their claims that divulging donors' names would make them vulnerable to harassment and violent attacks by overzealous LGBT rights supporters.
The Progressive Courage Campaign launched an online NOM tour tracker in mid-July, similar to its efforts during California's Proposition 8 campaign to monitor the National Organization for Marriage's activities. It noted that a pastor speaking at one of the group's rallies in Minneapolis, Minnesota, had previously compared gays and lesbians to pedophiles, adulterers, and alcoholics. And in Indianapolis, Indiana, a National Organization for Marriage supporter displayed a sign with 2 nooses above the title, Solution to Gay Marriage, and the biblical passage from Leviticus, They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. The National Organization for Marriage has yet to respond to calls from several LGBT and progressive groups to repudiate that murderous proposal. But the Indianapolis Sign recalls a widely circulated online posting a few years ago that sarcastically asked about other literal interpretations of the Bible, including,
"I would like to sell my daughter into slavery, as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. In this day and age, what would be a fair price for her?
When I burn a bull on the altar as a sacrifice, I know it creates a pleasing odor for the Lord, Leviticus 1:9. The problem is my neighbors. They claim the odor is not pleasing to them. Should I smite them?
And I have a neighbor who insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2 clearly states that he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself?"
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 31st, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm John Torres.
Jennifer, I know that we have some things going on in our community, and there was a press conference today. Is that correct?
That's right. This afternoon at 2:30, there was a press conference over at the Transgender Center over on Pacific Street. And it was the Fry Law Firm and the lawyers there that are representing Nikki Aragus.
Who is Nikki?
Who is the spouse of the firefighter Thomas Aragus III, who died tragically in a fire.
In Wharton. Okay.
And because of the way the family reacted, there's now they have challenged the probate court, which would have normally probated, like any other marriage, the assets of the marriage, and so the disposition of any of the funds in the family, the insurance, this sort of thing. And so now it's ended up in a lawsuit.
And just so our listeners know, that there's this case and they're denying the benefits to the wife because they're saying it's an illegitimate union.
Well, what they did is they said that, one, that Thomas Aragus did not know that Nikki was transsexual. And that because of that, it was a same-sex marriage. And they're referring to the Littleton case that occurred in San Antonio back in 1999. There's a couple of things that need to be recognized. And this what came out in the press conference was that, one, there's documentation, emails and the like, that Thomas, in fact, did know. As a matter of fact, when Nikki went for her surgery, he sent her an email, you know, wishing her well, saying he loved her and the whole business, you know, and this, they were living together at the time. And then secondly, a year before that time, he went with Nikki to the doctor to discuss the surgery and all of the... So the issue that he didn't know, which is what the parents have been talking about, fraud, was sort of illegitimate.
It's kind of coming out that he did know.
He did know. There was never a question about that. It's the fact that, and I don't know this is fact because no one brought that up, but from listening to everyone, it sounded as if maybe he didn't tell his family. You know, he hadn't been honest with them, and so they're the ones that are surprised where he was not.
So in this press conference, what came out of that?
Well, what came out of it was the copies of the different pleadings and answers to the case that's before the judge up in Wharton. But one of the items that's the linchpin was the 1999 case of Littleton versus Prang has been overruled by operational law.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that in 2009, the Texas Family Code was amended by the legislature, section 2.005, and it recognized sex change for the purposes of marriage in Texas.
So you can get married in Texas
if you've had a sex change.
Two men, if one of them gets a sex change.
That's right.
Per Texas law.
The legislature argued it, went through both houses, it was voted. As a matter of fact, it went through unanimously in both houses, as far as I understand from the documentation I read over. And so, without opposition is the way the wording is. So, the state of Texas, through its legislature, which included Chisholm, which is remarkable, said okay. And it included sex change in there. So that's not really the issue any longer. The Littleton case has been superseded by Texas law, which sort of negated all of the arguments in this. Now, the hope is that after, you know, depositions and the other legalese that goes along with it, that the judge will see fit to just go on and handle this as he would normally do in any other death of a spouse.
That should be the case, where it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. That's
or should not matter.
It should never matter.
Right.
If the laws of the state of Texas recognize her, because she had a sex change, as female, which is all the documentation, and this was a legitimate marriage because of the recognition of the state of Texas, then there shouldn't be a question. This whole case should not be occurring. Unfortunately, it is, and it was really good. Now, tomorrow there's another one at 11 o'clock, a press conference, and they're bringing the one of the witnesses who was present at a conversation, was present when Thomas and Nikki had the conversation with the doctor concerning her surgery. So it sort of negates a lot of stuff.
And so we have our own Phyllis Fry on the case.
Phyllis Fry, which segue right into it. We're going to have Phyllis on the show on August 23rd in the first hour to talk about the case and see what's happened over the next couple of weeks and bring us up to date and see where we are on the case.
That's going to be a good show.
I think it will be. So y'all mark it down and come back on the show.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, we're talking about equality and human rights, and what better than to discuss
bowling.
Bowling and HRC.
Yeah, bowling. HRC and bowling. You were talking about equality.
Well,
I went right to bowling.
Well, I was kind of getting to that point where we're kind of bowling for equality. That is an event that's coming up.
That's clever.
Yes.
I've heard that before. About a year ago, I heard that.
I think this is a yearly event. This Sunday, HRC, Human Rights Campaign, is hosting Bowling for Equality. And in the studio, we have Janie Lopez, who is on the board of directors for HRC. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, okay, we're bowling. We're knocking down the pins of oppression, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, tell us about Bowling for Equality.
Well, Bowling for Equality first got started a year ago, and there were several of other cities around the U.S. that have HRC steering committees, and they had been very successful in planning these types of events. So we decided, since we are very hot between the months of July and September, what not be a better way than to stay indoors and have a bowling Sunday afternoon party? And we certainly did, probably not really knowing that it was going to be that successful. It really was just amazing last year with about 350 people.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm all for indoor exercise and AC, so definitely.
Yeah. Indoor events?
Indoor events where, you know, you get a little exercise.
Get a little equality.
Equality and exercise.
I love to bowl.
I do too.
And it was fantastic last year.
It was. It really was. And I think people were generally very surprised at how much fun they were going to have there once they got there. Of course, you know, we do have to have disco music playing in the background for people that want to break out and start dancing as they're trying to, you know, compete and win some of the big prizes that we give away. So, yeah, it's quite interesting to see people get that excited about bowling on a Sunday afternoon.
So the people there, their prizes they can win if they bowl well?
Yes. We actually have different kinds of categories. And, of course, we have one category is about the best dressed team.
Oh, no.
So you can dress up any way you want. Last year, our first year, we had a team called the Pink Ladies, and it was a team of five women, and they had these really nicely decorated pink shirts, and had, from way back, the pink triangle, which was I thought they did a really incredible job of coming up with their own theme. And the Pink Ladies walked around and greeted everybody. I mean, they were quite fun, so it was a lot of fun.
Now, were there the teams? Are they four or five?
It's five people per team.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, five bowlers. And the time frame, you get to bowl for 3 hours. So you can bowl, you might be fast and bowl three games, or you could bowl four. It just depends on how fast your team is, but you can bowl for three full hours.
Now, if we have listeners out there that don't have a team and they're just by themselves, can they sign up by themselves?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We've got plenty of teams that might only have three players and sometimes only two. So we try to bring all those people together to actually play with other people. And, you know, it's a really good way of getting to know each other.
Absolutely.
You know, getting to know new people. So
networking and kind of meeting like-minded, equality-focused people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all I got to do, I mean, if depending on what I'm doing on Sunday, and it's about 1:30 after lunch, I go, God, where was that again? I can go bowling.
Mm-hmm.
I can come out. I can sign up at the time and get on one of the teams and just have a good time and meet new people.
Absolutely. Last year, we were real surprised at the number of people that just showed up and decided they just wanted to bowl that afternoon. And we didn't turn them away. Certainly we did not. We were able to line up another 10. I think it was 8 or 9 teams.
Wow.
And then there was some teams that had only a few people, so we were able to move some of the other people in there. So it was quite interesting to see that kind of people show up at the last minute.
And now where is this taking place, did we say?
This is taking place at the Bel Air Palace Lanes,
which is kind of our unofficial gay lanes.
Oh, it is. And the people,
official.
I have to...
Disco bowling, is that what it is? Or like Disco Kroger?
Exactly.
I do have to say that Bel Air Lanes has just been very, very supportive, and they're very easy to work with, and they've done a really great job in helping us plan this. So I know that I used to work right down the street from there, and we used to go there at lunchtime and just bowl during our lunch hour, and it was always a lot of fun. But very, very nice people, and I'm glad that we're going back to that same bowling alley.
Now, this is raising money for HRC. For our listeners that may not know what HRC is and what it does in our community, tell us about HRC.
Well, HRC stands for the Human Rights Campaign, and the Human Rights Campaign is the largest gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered civil rights organization. Presently, it has somewhere over 750,000 members, which is, you know, been a real big goal for us, is to try to hit that 1 million mark at some point in its existence. So we're hoping that will happen one day. But a member for us is anyone that actually touches HRC. So it could be someone that just goes online and buys a t-shirt, or it could be someone that actually volunteers. So you become a member instantly when you somehow are affiliated with HRC, and that could be in a number of different ways. The organization does work every day to make sure that our rights are fair and equal to all others, and we certainly have had a lot of success with, I'm thinking back about the Lawrence case, Lawrence versus Texas. I mean, HRC was forefront there on the Hill every day trying, you know, to help as much as they could with that battle. And I think about all of the other types of rights that we're trying to fight for, especially in the workplace.
I was going to ask you about the Corporate Equality Index, which is amazing.
That was one of the things that I, as far as useful to the audience, the people that maybe don't know a lot about HRC, one of the functions or what the activities do is they do this index of corporations.
Right.
And in which case, the HRC, through the questionnaires, rate different companies in their GLBT friendliness.
Right,
and
exactly.
Response on that. How would I find out about that?
Well, you could go online and go to HRC.org and go into the CEI, and it stands for Corporate Equality Index. And actually, there's a really nice document in there that you can print, and it has all the actual, it's a survey that we just finished doing with a lot of the businesses and found out more details of what really exists out there in the workplace. For the longest time, you know, when you start putting that corporate equality index together, you don't have enough information a lot of times. And what happened was that we were able to go out into the workplace and ask questions. And one of the very interesting things about the corporate equality index is that 5% of the people under the age of 24, that's how low the number is of people that will actually be out in the workplace. 5% under 24 years old. And that's kind of interesting to me that, you know, that actually is something that I would have never thought about.
You would think it'd be a lot more.
You would. Yeah. You would think it would be more. But it just shows you how small the figures are because people aren't really out in the workplace. Mm. And, of course, you know, a lot of them, it's because they have that fear of being fired. But
as we know in Texas, it's still legal to be fired for being gay.
Absolutely.
There's no protection. So
no, there is no protection. And I think there are a number of companies that have really have put a full force out there to make sure that their employees are being treated fairly.
And I think it's in part due to the corporate equality index where they're being measured and potential employees are looking for those qualities in a good company, that they're demanding rights, so to speak, from the different corporations.
Yes, it's been very interesting to learn from in a circle of friends. When you start thinking about who their employers are and what they go through every day, some may have a really nice job and it's comfortable and people are very accepting, and then you have those that have to hide who they are, and that happens all the time.
They get the questions about, so what did you do this weekend?
Right, exactly.
Who did you go with?
And what were you wearing?
Oh, I went with...
whose party was it?
Yes, whose party was it?
And what part of town was it in?
Exactly. Exactly.
That does happen a lot. It's frightening that... but I do have to say that there is some real positive measures that we have to talk about, and it's the fact that there's over 300 companies that actually are coming into the corporate equality index. When we started, it was like 20. So there is a big, you know, it is progressing over time, so which is a good thing.
And I understand there's also a kind of an analog to this for the healthcare.
Yes, there's an HEI. It's the healthcare equality, and that's going to be very similar to the corporate equality index. And I have to say that, you know, they are starting to work on that and looking at all of those healthcare systems, and what a time for that to happen with the fact that we had this healthcare reform going on. So it's interesting, I think, that I think there's a lot of real good value to going down that road of providing this for all the healthcare systems.
Now, if we have listeners out there that are kind of interested and want to get involved with HRC and volunteering, is there a contact that they should...
Well, they can contact me at any time, and can I give my phone number out?
You can, not? And if you're that brave, or you can give out your email.
But the other thing is that what I'm going to do is, what I can say is that you can go to hrchouston.org, and actually that will, you know, there's everybody's phone number, name, what positions they're in. You know, the Federal Club is definitely one of our strongest parts of the organization. Our events community is very big. We also have a political committee. So there's a lot of variety of different committees that people can get involved in.
Absolutely.
I had a question concerning it, and this is sort of going back to the indexes. HRC does this so that we out there, the consumer, the GLBT consumer, can know who to use the services.
Right.
You know, I know Shell's excellent. You know, well, I don't buy Exxon gasoline because Exxon Mobil is anti-gay.
Is a hater.
They're haters. But Shell, and you know, the rest of, there are some on there, and I have changed my buying habits based on the index.
Yeah, it's interesting that you really don't think, well, I think that the, you know, being a consumer is highly important in our community.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very big spending power, and I think that companies have finally realized that there is a real need to brand out in the GLBT community.
Yes.
It definitely has it's got a good potential for them to actually get more interested in the community and really, you know, building up their power as well.
I think the pink dollar is almighty, and we boycott people that are against us, and we support people that are with us.
Right. Right. So. Yeah, I think you're right with the different oil and gas companies. Right now the Target and Best Buy.
Oh, yes.
Is something that's hot in out there.
And HRC's on top of that, issuing press releases and kind of informing people.
Right.
And I see people on Facebook and social media responding and saying, you know, that they are supporting, you know,
mm-hmm.
what HRC is doing. And, you know, I think that that's important, that our message is sent back to those corporations that they can't support just people that are anti-gay.
And you don't want to lose those companies. You don't want them to start slowly moving to the other side, because that could cause, you know, a company like Target, you think that they'd have always been supportive of our community, and then all of a sudden this happens. So that's why you have HRC in place.
Exactly.
Ready to, you know, to go with the punches if they need to.
Somebody out there has been too busy to know what was going on. So tell us, what's going on at Target?
Target actually contributed some money to an organization that is just not GLBT friendly, and the amount was a pretty large amount of money, and that's, you know, one of the things that I think that corporations go through is that when they get a request for dollars, you know, and they give money to an organization, they might not know what that organization is or what they support. And that does happen, because, I mean, I know that there's probably millions of requests that come into all of those corporate companies on a daily basis. So, but the thing is that they have to retract and go back and say, you know, this isn't in part of our, you know, the way that we handle business. And they just have to step up and just either send the money back or decide not to support that organization again.
Yeah, take the money back or lose a whole lot of gay customers.
Right, yeah.
Customers.
I mean, you think about Target, and I always thought that they were a company that was always trying to market to the GLBT community.
Well, and I think that's part of HRC's Corporate Equality Index. I mean, that would definitely reflect,
right.
And I think that will steer consumers, you know, towards different outlets.
I know the GLBT Chamber, the National Chamber in D.C., has done a lot of great work in telling us about the consumer and what the consumer and the gay community, you know, how much they really are worth out there. Because it is big dollars.
We are consumers, and we like to spend the money.
We do like spending. And we like spending, you know, money even like at a bowling event.
Absolutely. I was about to say, let's segue back into those bowling shoes.
And we're back.
So. All right, we've got the event. It's coming up on Sunday.
Sunday, 2 to 5.
Why don't you give us the specifics?
So it's Sunday afternoon from 2 to 5 o'clock, and, you know, we encourage people to arrive early because people tend to arrive about a little after 1 just to have either a little cocktail or just, you know.
They got to rent their shoes.
They got to rent their shoes and try on several pairs before they find the real, real right shoe to wear.
And you have to find the most fabulous ball to bowl with.
Yes. And there's all different colors, so
yeah.
You won't get
the one
stuck
with the sparkly red one.
Yeah.
There's only so many pink balls.
And there's plenty of them at that bowling alley, is from what I remember.
I see.
But there's also different levels, you know, that you can participate in if you want to do more than just bowl for the day.
One quick question. For those of us who can't participate,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing a wedding down
right.
in Galveston, and because that I won't be there, but how can I support?
Well, you know, the one thing that we don't ever turn away is that if anybody walks in and wants to help us with, we had several people last year, they said, well, I don't bowl, but I thought it'd be kind of fun just to hang out here. And I said, well, how would you feel about helping us, you know, set up, you know, the area with all of the registration? They said, oh, no, well, I'll be glad to help. So they actually came and started helping. And then after it was all set and everybody was registered, you know, they just basically had a good time and visited with friends and all that. But the nice thing about that is that that person is continuing to come back again. So it was a real good way of them to get an idea of how to volunteer for the organization. And people do come and just basically, like a team might have a whole posse come with them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like their cheering crowd. So yeah. It's
but if I can't be there, I can still be a sponsor, can't
I? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I can go online, or where would I go to be a sponsor?
You
what would I have to do?
You
what
can
is
go
the,
on
that website?
The website is www.hrc.org/Houston Bowling.
Oh, well, that's easy.
It's very simple. And but just some of the, there are several different ways you can do a strike plan, a perfect game plan. Of course, they're at different levels.
Different levels that support
mm-hmm.
HRC.
And it includes, and those include whether you want to brand your own company there at the event and have your signage up on the lanes, or you can decorate your alley. You can do just about anything you want to.
So if you're interested in helping HRC and being part of the bowling, there are lots of ways to do it, from volunteering to participating to just writing a check as a sponsor.
Absolutely.
And it's this Sunday, and you probably are going to be hot anyway, so just go hang out in the bowling alley.
Yeah, that's right. That's
We've
right.
been talking to Janie Lopez, Board of Director for HRC, and helping out with the event this weekend. And anything else you want to let our listeners know?
I just want to say that the Human Rights Campaign is very appreciative of everybody that's done a lot of work for us. Jennifer, you've done a lot of work for the Human Rights Campaign. And I just want to do a shout out to all our volunteers. We just have some of the greatest volunteers in Houston. And I just want to thank everybody for being a volunteer of HRC.
Thank you, Janie. And this is Queer Voices.
Give it everything you got. Just move like you're in a groove or a deep valley. Prove you're someone that the world needs madly. Keep the heart of everything near you. Be who you are. Shine like you do. Aboriginal. I'm speaking directly to you. Full blood, quarter, third, or sixteenth. Res folk, city folk, blue eyes, brown or green. Caucasian features or cheekbones that cut glass. Ignite the future, joined by the past. Rise like the sun, you already have begun. And blood boils even into weak at the quantum. Stay strong, help each other along. To every shade of red, I dedicate this song. Just stay strong and rock. Hey, rock and roll. Don't sink. So rock. Hey, rock and roll. Don't sink. So rock. Hey, rock and roll. Don't sink.
Just rock the boat, y'all.
I like writing rhymes, but I'm not supposed to. Writing rhymes, not what fair-skinned girls do. I just bounce off the sounds and the tones. The beat and the bass make the day less lonely. I dream of a lovely time. Separate sense from the voice in my mind. I get wet thinking, hypothetically. Break a sweat dreaming, I'm gonna get me. One on the front and back on both sides. Don't mean I don't get it good from a man, right? It's just life loving, all kinds. So many beautiful hearts and bright minds. So many ways to click and shoe shine, but it's so outlawed to dig a double time. But the sky is the skin in the eyes of the stars. I love it all, it's just who I are. I rock the pain, rock the boat. Don't sing. Rock the pain, rock the boat. Don't sing.
Rock the boat, y'all.
Rock the pain, rock the boat.
Everybody,
don't
everybody
sing.
Just rock the boat.
Rock the pain, rock the boat. Don't sing.
Rock the boat.
Don't
rock the boat, y'all.
Well, I, considering the title on this, Rock the Boat, I kind of thought that this was going to be a cover of the Master P song, Rock the Boat, by the same title, but it's different lyrics. So this one was Rock the Boat by Kenny Starr from the album Anything from 2006.
Houston Press Music Awards Showcase featuring Matt and Kim is coming to the Washington Avenue Corridor on Saturday, August 7th from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. Acts include Jonathan Tyler and the Northern Lights, Trade the Truth, and 60 local bands. Washington Avenue venues include Tapped House of Beer, Cobain, Walters on Washington, Rebels Honky Tonk, The Drake, Washington Avenue Drinkery, Sugarcane, Manor on Washington, Pearl Bar, and Salt Bar. Shuttle service is provided by The Way. Wristbands are available at HoustonPress.com. Outdoor stage at Washington Avenue and Silver Street is open to all ages. Music venues are for 21 and up. So come out on Saturday, August 7th from 2 to 10 p.m. and see all the great music that Houston has to offer. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
I'm Gladys House, and I want to be on the local station board of KPFT to contribute to the creativity and expansion of programming to attract a broader listening audience and increase the fundraising of KPFT. The local station board would work to give input and have ongoing dialogue with Pacifica and KPFT staff to broaden the concepts and stay current with state-of-the-art programming and technology. KPFT can better serve the community by conducting regular public sessions to get input and concerns of the general public. I seek your support, your vote on the ballot. Please vote Gladys House. Again, cast your vote for Gladys House. Thank you very much.
Candidate statements belong to the author of the statement only and should not be assumed to be true or to reflect the editorial stance or policy of the Pacifica Foundation or the opinions of its management, Pacifica National Board, station staff, or other listener members. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy.
Can a ballot initiative campaign teach a decided voter new tricks? A veteran rights activist considers those expensive propositions later in this half hour. U.S. Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan passed through her confirmation hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee this week with flying colors. However, with a career primarily in academia, she did not have a history of rulings from the bench for her committee examiners to pore through. With Democrat Patrick Leahy of Vermont moderating as committee chair, Alabama Republican Senator Jeff Sessions tried to nail Kagan on her handling of campus military recruitment when she was the dean of Harvard Law School.
When you became dean, you personally opposed the don't ask, don't tell policy and felt strongly about it, did you not?
I do oppose the don't ask, don't tell
policy. And you did then?
And I did then.
And you... in 03, not long after you had been became president, you said, quote, "I abhor the military's discrimination recruitment policy," close quote. "I consider it," quote, "a profound wrong, a moral injustice of the first order," close quote. And you said that not within 6 months or so of becoming dean. And that was an email you sent to the entire law school.
Senator Sessions, I have repeatedly said that I believe that the don't ask, don't tell policy is unwise and unjust. I believed it then, and I believe it now. And we were trying to do two things. We were trying to make sure that military recruiters had full and complete access to our students, but we were also trying to protect our own anti-discrimination policy and to protect the students whom it is, whom the policy is supposed to protect, which in this case were our gay and lesbian students.
I'm just a little taken aback by the tone of your remarks because it's unconnected to reality. I know what happened at Harvard. I know you were an outspoken leader against the military policy. I know you acted without legal authority to reverse Harvard's policy and deny those military equal access to campus until you were threatened by the United States government of loss of federal funds. This is what happened.
It did not happen
in that way. And I think if you had any complaint, they should have been made to the United States Congress, not to those men and women who we send in harm's way to serve our nation.
Especially because of the number of people, including the dean of West Point, who has praised you and said that you're absolutely not anti-military. I'll let you respond, take time to respond to what Senator Sessions just said.
Well, thank you, Senator Leahy. I respect and indeed I revere the military. My father was a veteran. One of the great privileges of my time at Harvard Law School was dealing with all these wonderful students that we had who had served in the military and students who wanted to go to the military. And I always tried to make sure that I conveyed my honor for the military, and I always tried to make sure that the military had excellent access to our students. And in the short period of time, Senator Sessions, that the military had that access through the Veterans Organization, military recruiting actually went up. But I also felt a need to protect our, to defend our school's very long-standing anti-discrimination policy and to protect the men and women, the students, who were meant to be protected by that policy, the gay and lesbian students who wanted to serve in the military and do that most honorable kind of service. And those are the two things that I tried to do. And I think, again, the military always had good access at Harvard Law School.
Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa tried to tempt Kagan into a debate on same-gender marriage, but it only led to a discussion of more technical legal interpretations.
Marriage is a state issue. Do you believe that marriage is a question reserved for the states to decide? And I'm only seeking your opinion because I know there might be cases coming down the road. Do you believe that marriage is a question reserved for states to decide?
Senator Grassley, there is, of course, a case coming down the road, and I want to be extremely careful about this question and not to in any way prejudge any case that might come before me.
That's your right. So you don't want to say any more. Is that what you're saying?
I think I'll leave it at there, given okay. the...
Well, then let me follow up. Do you agree that the Supreme Court's decision in Baker versus Nelson, 1972... holding that the federal courts lack jurisdiction to hear challenges to state marriage laws, quote, for want of a substantial federal question, end of quote. You agree with that decision? Why or why not? Is it settled law, in other words?
So I think that my best understanding is that that decision has some precedential weight, but not the weight of a quote-unquote normal decision. My understanding is that there's actually a question about what kind of precedential weight such a decision is entitled to. And arguments on both sides of that. I think, you know, probably the better view or the view that most people hold, I think, is that it's entitled to some precedential weight, but not the weight that would be given to a fully argued, fully briefed decision.
Nothing came of the closet lesbian rumors sparked by a picture of Elena Kagan playing softball that appeared on the front page of the Wall Street Journal shortly after her nomination was announced. The Senate Judiciary Committee is expected to approve President Obama's pick as Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court in mid-July. Republicans seem unlikely to try to block Kagan's path to the High Court when her nomination comes up for a full vote on the Senate floor.
You can follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio. Read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
Since 1998, ballot measures defining the legal status of same-gender couples have been placed before voters in 33 U.S. states. To what extent did voter intention change over the course of those political campaigns? A veteran queer rights activist shared her thoughts with This Way Out's Sherry Lunn about a recent study that may answer that question with implications for LGBT activism around the world.
New research released in June examines polling data to find out how well they reflect ultimate election results. Roberta Sklar, a longtime LGBT rights advocate and former director of communications for the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, shares her perspective on the surprising results.
A groundbreaking study by NYU professor Patrick Egan related to polling on ballot measures on marriage equality and same-sex relationships was recently released. The study shows that voters don't move during campaigns. They vote the way they said they would right from the start. What? I said to myself when I first read it, and I did a double take. So what are all the energy, time, resources, and money spent about? The ads, the door knocking, the name calling. I said to friends and colleagues, this report's going to knock your socks off. According to Professor Egan's report, a study of 167 polls taken in 33 states over a decade, there's no evidence to support the notion that voters move one way or another on marriage equality over the course of a 4 to 6 month campaign. Both Jeff Kors of Equality California and Kate Kendall of the National Center for Lesbian Rights believe that the reason voters don't move is they are being hit by arguments from both sides, are skeptical of all political arguments, and stick with where they were. This makes a lot of sense to me. Most voters don't think or care all that much about marriage equality in the first place. And with lies coming from our opponents, rebuttals from our side, name-calling all around, why would voters try to sort it out? All this does is reinforce what we already know. A campaign is no time to start to try to change hearts and minds. So what is it for? Certainly, it is there to get out the vote, to reinforce those who support us, and to counter the opposition so that they don't simply walk all over us. But there is no way around the hard work that must be done between campaigns to educate and bring our message to bear. We need to stop whining and start working. It's not up to organizations with magic messaging. Instead, it's up to each of us right now to reach out to the people in our lives. They are not abstract voters or the movable middle, but our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, our relatives. They can and will move, not because of a TV ad, but because we took the time to move them. What we do know is that when people move to our side, they stay there. and that they will be with us the next time they are casting their vote. I'm sick at heart that our rights get put up for a popular vote, but I don't have that choice. That is where it has been happening. When I was coming up, I never thought that our rights would even be considered, let alone up for debate. And while I resent how that debate often occurs, and am as impatient as anyone with the pace of progress, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to fight for myself and my family. But I also realize that this fight is ultimately about how much I am willing to invest in it. By reaching out, person by person, day after day. Won't you join me? I'm Roberta Sklar.
You can read the full report, Findings from a Decade of Polling on Ballot Measures Regarding the Legal Status of Same-Sex Couples, prepared by public opinion expert Patrick J. Egan, Ph.D., at the Walter and Evelyn Haas Jr. Foundation website by logging on to www.haasjr.org. That's www.haasjr.org. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lunn.
You don't question love, you let it be. You don't give the right to some and take that right from me. And if it's family you want, then welcome to my home. Love is something my family owns. You don't tell a child you can't be raised here. And I can see their eyes and in them questioning and fear. 'Cause a family they know is one that takes you home, loves you more than you'll ever know. Take it fast now, or take it slow. Your deepest breath, you know, deserves one more. 'Cause I'll never kiss the face of a more beautiful soul. You don't question love, you set it free. Let it grow to something everyone can see. Your eyes, you will see your love in mine, and you will bless it, and you will bless it, and you will bless it. No, don't question love.
Okay, so that was from all the way back to a month ago from when we weren't.
That was right after the 4th of July.
Yeah, that was because, you know, the copper thieves stole our signal by stealing our copper.
But at least the people in Galveston heard it.
Yeah, so yeah. They just heard it again. And then the rest of us who didn't hear it,
we heard it this
heard
time.
It now.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, you know, with a lot of stuff going on, one of my favorite things is going on Saturday. We had an interview about what's going on Sunday, Bowling for Equality. But on Saturday afternoon is Queer Bingo. Community Center has Queer Bingo.
Well, I know that's one of your favorites.
That is one of my favorites. You know, and I never was much of a bingo player. I think it's just Queer Bingo. That just sounds like it would be exciting more than... There's certainly not a bunch of old gray-haired little old ladies sitting around playing bingo, I assure you of that. You'll have a great time. Absolutely. Queer Bingo, it's on Saturday, and it begins at 4:30, and it's at One's a Meal, 812 Westheimer, and it's sponsored by the Houston GLBT Community Center. Also, coming up during the week, we have tonight, which would be every Monday, is the coming out group that begins at 7 p.m. on Thursday, is this HIV support group, and it begins at 6 p.m. Of course, Saturday is Queer Bingo. And then looking ahead, Unhinged Productions does their rehearsals there. So if you want to be part of Unhinged Productions, you should come out and introduce yourself. You know, a couple other things. On Wednesday of this week is the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. It's going to be at the Haven Center. I always like to tell everybody it's right next to the chocolate bar there at St. Stephen's Church in the community center. So everyone come out. If you have some other things you want to put on the community bulletin board here at Queer Voices, send us a tweet, email, go to our website and let us know. We're on Facebook, and let us know, and we'll try to get it on next week's show. And this is Jennifer Renee.
That was from an album called The Honeymoon Is Over. And the name of the song, The Honeymoon Is Over, that was Bettina Shelker from an album from 2007. This is Queer Voices.
Welcome to Queer Voices, and this is J.D. Doyle and a mini-segment of my show, Out Radio. You can find the whole show and much more at www.outradio.com, but this will give you a taste of it. First up is Greg Walters with two songs from his CD EP from last year, starting with the song Leave It Alone.
Leave it alone for now. I don't want to talk about it. We don't need to work it out. And just let it be. You want me to know right now. Can I take some time to make up my mind? I don't understand how you believe all you've heard. You're so self-assured. Leave it alone. Let it be. Some people, they rush these things. I'm not one of those. And heaven, no, 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 knows the feelings tomorrow will bring. I can't trust myself or no one else. So leave it. Talk about it. We don't need to work it out. So just let it be. And don't hurry, love. Don't hurry, love. Don't hurry. Talk about it. We don't need to work it out. Mm-hmm. So just let it be. Yeah. And over my head, I wanted to tell you, but I wrote this song instead. 'Cause you shall come in all strong. And baby, to be so young and serious feels wrong. And I'm gonna try to fight it. I'm gonna try to fight it. I'm gonna fight it. Stop
take a look at yourself, yeah, yeah. All of this dressing spells disaster for your health. And I don't know why we can't keep this fun, keep it light, and keep it drinks on Friday night. And I'm gonna try to fight it. I'm gonna try to fight it. I'm gonna fight it. Yeah, I'm gonna fight it. As much as I keep on holding back, baby, I'll keep on holding on. I'm gonna fight it. Yeah, I'm gonna fight it.
Won't you please
believe me? I like you, I do. But make no mistake that it scares me. The And I'm gonna try to fight it. I'm gonna try to fight it. I'm gonna fight it. I'm gonna fight it. As much as I keep on holding back, bigger love keeps on holding on. I'm gonna fight it. I'm gonna fight it.
Also by Greg Walters, you heard Fight It. And up next is The Boyfriend Song by a Canadian artist going by Gentleman Reg. Again, that was The Boyfriend Song by Gentleman Reg. It's from his 2008 album, Little Buildings. And closing this mini-segment about radio is another boyfriend song called Boyfriend. It's by Inertia Kiss and comes from the movie soundtrack Between Love and Goodbye.
We had a chance in a million to one. Driving the Corvette down the road on the run. Oh, running in the night. Oh, running in the night. Me and my boyfriend. Why should we care for the powers that be? Always gonna do anything to be free. Oh, running in the night.
Is Queer Voices.
The gay Asian stand-up sits down on one of U.S. daytime TV's favorite sofas later in this half hour. Australia's lesbian cabinet minister and senator Penny Wong heads the government's Department of Climate Change. But the elevated temperatures around her this week had nothing to do with the weather. Wong has played a major role in passing legislation giving rights in several areas to Australian same-gender couples. However, the country's first out and first Asian cabinet-level official said during a July 25th Channel 10 political discussion that she supports her Labour Party's heterosexuals-only definition of marriage.
We've got a question that's come in on Twitter from Astrid. How do you feel about being part of a party that does not support gay marriage?
I get this question quite often, and I always make the same point. I am part of a party, and I support the party policies. And many people inside the Labor Party have pressed for various reforms. I'm very proud of what we've achieved in terms of the recognition of the value and importance of same-sex relationships. We've changed, I think, some 80 pieces of legislation to make sure that we remove discrimination in a whole range of areas such as social security. On the issue of marriage, I think the reality is there is a cultural, religious, historical view around that which we have to respect, and the party's position is very clear that is an institution that is between a man and a woman.
But that sounds like you don't agree with it. You're just toeing the line as part of a team player.
No, I think that I do respect the fact that is how people view the institution. And so the most important thing, I think, is how do we ensure that we have respectful relationships, that we have relationships that are recognised within Australian law and not discriminated against. That's what we focused on. I mean, this government has done more to remove discrimination for gay and lesbian Australians than any government in Australia's history, and I'm very proud of our achievements there.
Those statements launched a firestorm that confronted Wong a few days later on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's program Q&A. An audience questioner pinned Wong down on her position, then Greens Senator Christine Milne launched an attack that included Prime Minister Julia Gillard and the entire Labour Party. Wong was defended by Conservative Labour power broker and pundit Graham Richardson.
We've got a lot of people who are interested in asking this question, many in fact. It comes from Danielle Raphael.
My question is directed to Penny. Penny, you say that you support your party's decision to be against gay marriage even though you are gay yourself. How can you sit idly back and allow yourself to remain silent about the obvious inequality that you are kept in?
I'm glad you asked me this question, because I think it's important for me to explain to you how I approach this issue and politics. And the first thing I wanted to say to you is that by virtue of who I am, prejudice and discrimination are things I have some first-hand knowledge of. And when I entered the parliament, I did actually think very carefully about how to handle being Asian and gay and in the parliament, because it hadn't been done before. I thought a couple of things. One of them was about how I would handle it personally, and that was to be absolutely open about who I am, to never shy away from that and try to be dignified, even when it might be difficult. And part of the reason I did that was I thought it was very important to show that you should never be ashamed of who you are, even when there are people who would try to make you be. And I thought that was one of the best things I could do in terms of how I handled it. On the issue of, reform, there are a number of us in the party, Anthony Albanese, Tanya, others, who've worked very hard to try and improve the party's position and policies on gay and lesbian Australians. And I can remember in 1998, a national conference I was at, I think Richo was there, was the very first time we actually had in the platform any reference to discrimination on the basis of sexuality. And since that time, I think you've seen progressive improvements, modernisation in the Labor Party's platform. And at the last election, we went to the election with the most comprehensive set of law reform in relation to gay and lesbian rights that the country's ever seen, and we have delivered them all. We have delivered them all. And they are important things. They are things such as parental recognition of children of same-sex relationships under the Family Law Act. They are recognition of same-sex relationships as de facto relationships in federal law, in veterans' affairs, in terms of Medicare access. These are things which make a real difference to people's lives. Now, I accept that you and some other people in the community would like us to have a different position in terms of marriage. That isn't the position of the party. But what I would say to you is do take a moment to consider what we have tried to do, what we have advocated for, and what we have delivered for gay and lesbian Australians.
Well, this is a lack of leadership, I have to say. This is a real lack of leadership, and this is another example of the Prime Minister's lack of leadership. Virtually as soon as she became the Prime Minister, she ruled out going to marriage equality. She ruled out getting rid of this vestige of discrimination. And she went on to say it's not religious, so is it historical, is it cultural? And if it's historical and cultural, it is the responsibility of the Prime Minister to lead this country to a better place. And that is what we need to be doing. We have legislation. We put it to the Parliament before. It was voted down by everyone except the Greens. We will be putting it in there again in balance of power in the Senate, and we are hoping that this time whoever is in government will go to a conscience vote on this, because I'm confident that the Australian community really wants to see this change, and Julia Gillard should offer leadership in this regard.
Well, I'm going to throw that back for a brief response to Penny Wong, and I suppose the key question there is whether a conscience vote
I don't agree with conscience votes, and I'll tell you why, and that's also from a feminist perspective. We've had conscience votes in the Labor Party on a range of issues. We obviously have on abortion, but on other issues there are many reforms which would not have been achieved. I have a view that you join a team, you're part of the team, that's the way we operate, and people sometimes like that and sometimes they don't. But that's,
all right, we've got time for one quick response from the audience there. Sorry, just hang on to Greg.
Malcolm Turnbull openly disagrees with Liberal policy on ETS. Why can't you openly disagree with Labor policy on gay marriage?
Well, because as I said...
I'm amazed somewhat by these questions, really. You would not have had many of the things that have now happened that she's already referred to if people like Penny weren't in the Labor Party and weren't pushing for him. There are a lot of people in the Labor Party who don't agree with this stuff. At the moment, there's nowhere near a majority. But there will be. There will be over time, because people like Penny will work for it and it'll get up in the end. But give her a break, for God's sake. She's part of a caucus. There's a whole lot of it. She doesn't run the government. She's a part of it. A part of it. There's a thing called cabinet solidarity, and if she wants to break it, she gets nowhere. You lose someone who fights for your cause. That, my friends, is dumb. Big time dumb.
Penny Wong's rationale for the Labor Party's position on marriage equality did not find many sympathetic ears among Australia's LGBT activists. Gay Greens leader Bob Brown told the press he was horrified by the climate minister's comments. Even other Labor politicians were willing to publicly challenge their party's stance. One of the most piercing barbs came from Australian marriage equality spokesman Alex Greenwich, who borrowed a phrase from his target when he wrote, "If culture, religion, and history were sound reasons for upholding discrimination, there would be no Senator Penny Wong." You're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon.
To laugh loud and long and clear. I love to laugh. It's getting worse every year.
His credits include M. Butterfly on Broadway and Hollywood's You Don't Mess with the Zohan. But comic actor Alec Mappa is probably best known for his memorable recurring roles on TV's Desperate Housewives and Ugly Betty. Mapa has been called America's Gaysian sweetheart because of his fundraising efforts for LGBT causes, and he certainly charmed the hosts of ABC TV's daytime talk fest The View this week. He sat in the center of the show's extra-large couch, flanked by its co-hosts Whoopi Goldberg, Joy Behar, Sherry Shepherd, and Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Good morning, and welcome to the Asian-Pacific portion of today's multicultural program.
You are funny.
Thank you.
You are funny.
4 seasons on Ugly Betty, I got to work with Vanessa Williams all the time. Absolute heaven. She loves the gays, and they love her. Which is one of the reasons why she always looks so frickin' amazing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because at any one given time, she has 20 homosexuals orbiting her, you know.
Yeah.
Attending
yeah.
to every eyelash, lip line, and fingernail.
She is a beautiful woman.
Yes. She has more gay men working on her face than Senator Craig in a public toilet. For a carbon footprint.
Oh my God.
I think I drowned 20 polar bears today just to look like this.
You're one of the few Asian actors on TV. Who were your role models?
Well, I didn't have anybody growing up. We had Mr. Sulu on Star Trek.
Yeah.
You're Star Trek royalty. Yeah.
Right.
And he was kind of fabulous. He had rank, he had position, he got to wear that stunning mustard velour top.
Yes. Everybody looks good in mustard.
And as helmsman of the Enterprise, he broke a lot of Asian stereotypes. You know, he was a very good driver. George Takei came out a couple years ago, and
nobody cared.
And nobody cared. What's the big deal? Well, first of all, is there anything gayer than Star Trek?
I don't know.
The entire crew wore bell-bottom capri pants and go-go boots. Their communications officer was a black woman with a beehive and a red miniskirt. Okay. And even their weapons were gay. They didn't have guns. They had phasers. Phasers. And if you didn't want to kill somebody, you could set your phaser on stun. I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to stun you. I'm stunning.
You would look stunning. Yeah,
stunning.
I'm told you that you were raised by your Catholic.
By wolves.
Filipino Catholic.
Now, that's island Catholicism, okay, from the province. We don't just believe in God. We believe in everything. Vampires, leprechauns, Bigfoot. The only thing we don't believe in is paying retail, okay? To Filipinos, The Exorcist is a documentary, okay? Like, I saw that movie and it scared me to death. Now, any sensible parent would have said, you know, honey, it's only a movie with special effects. Nobody gets possessed by the devil. My parents were like, that happened to your auntie and died.
Now, you just got back from performing in Mexico.
I was in Mexico at an all-inclusive resort with, it was all...
Where in Mexico?
In Ixtapa.
Okay.
And it was all gays and lesbians and their children that they purchased in Beijing. And,
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Sherry Lunn, and Roberta Sklar contributed program material. Thanks also to Rita Gonzalez and J.D. Doyle. Tom Goss sang You Don't Question Love, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by you. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. You can now also find us on iTunes. Read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com, follow us on Twitter at TWO Radio, and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. To receive our weekly program content, email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KDUR Durango, Colorado, 2MTM Kunambu, New South Wales, WNJR Washington, Pennsylvania, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Nepal is a small landlocked country where communist revolution is changing everything. People are rising up against kings, castes, and imperialism. Women are rising to lead. The revolution is spreading into surrounding India. In May and June of 2010, Eric Rebelarsi traveled to Nepal to report on these events. Join the Fire Collective of Houston for a presentation entitled The Mountains Tremble, a report back from the revolution in Nepal, on Monday, August 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Houston Institute for Culture at 708C Telephone Road. Eric Rebelarsi's presentation will tell the story of this revolution, the current situation in Nepal, and feature video and photography from his journey. Again, that event happens Monday, August 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Houston Institute for Culture at 708C Telephone Road. For more information, visit www.thefirecollective.org. This is KPFT Houston.
My name is Jim Krafka. I'm running for the board at KPFT. I grew up listening to KPFT, and I believe in its mission as an open forum, community-based radio station. The foundation of KPFT is people like you, its listener members. As a board member, I will focus on reaching out to greater populations of our community and bringing them into the KPFT family of listener members. I want to continue the vision of the Pacifica Foundation, providing a community radio station that fosters an understanding between individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors. Please vote for Jim Krafka.
This candidate statement is property of the author only and not KPFT or Pacifica. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 Galveston.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
I'm Dave Salerno. Our world is in crisis while Houston is being assaulted by far-right radio. KPFT's revenue is down. We're also in crisis. I'm a candidate for our local board to help us survive this crisis. We need better news programming to see the distortions hidden by the other media. KPFT needs reorganization to fight back more aggressively with programs accurately exposing corruption. We are chartered as an educational station. We're the only station in Mid-America with a fully independent news and human rights emphasis. When you vote for me, for Dave Salerno, you are voting to aggressively counterbalance the far-right media with its enemy. Its enemy is accurate news programming. Help save KPFT, the human rights station. Please vote. I'm Dave Salerno.
This candidate statement is property of the author only and not KPFT or Pacifica. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hello, KPFT. My name is Tiffany Poost, and I am excited and delighted to be running for the local station board. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I am a new Houstonian. I moved here in January of 2009, started working with local theater companies. My goal is to work as a community liaison between local theater artists, local performing artists, local visual artists, and also